Hello, my name is Jen Hickey. Welcome to the WEN podcast, a series of conversations with people as they share their WEN moments. Recognizing these times can change our destiny, help us to stop hiding behind the past or clinging to a future that may or may not happen. This podcast is about recognizing the power of the WEN moments. Hi guys, welcome back to the WEN podcast. So today I am chatting with Nigel Denby. He is a menopause dietitian. So we talk all about why it is so hard to shift the weight around this perimenopausal and menopause time, what is actually happening in our bodies, and why it seems that what we used to do maybe 10 years ago just does not seem to work anymore. So it's a really important chat. We talk about our cardiovascular health, our bone health, muscle health, what is going on around this time, this really, really important topic that we need to keep talking about. So would really appreciate it if you could share it. It's a must listen for all women, but I really feel that everybody benefits from this chat. So thanks again for all your feedback. Keep it coming. It's really, really great to hear from you and hear how much you're enjoying all the podcasts. I'm loving doing it myself. And I look forward to the next one. Look, I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much
for coming on.
So kind. Can we just start by just giving the listeners a little background into, did I hear you were a chef once upon a time?
That's right. Yeah. So, are we going to do, just go kind of go and keep running?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, and you ask questions along the way, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am Nigel Denby. I'm a registered dietitian, but I've been a dietitian for goodness about 20 odd years. But prior to that, my whole world was around food already, so but in a much more hospitality setting. So I trained originally as a chef, and then I worked on cruise liners and restaurants, and had a restaurant over here in England for a while, and I was a tea and coffee merchant for a while as well. So always food. And that's what really inspired me to get into dietetics. Interestingly, when I was working on a cruise ship, I accidentally drank some oven cleaner that was held in a bottle of Perrier and ended up in hospital for a long time in Boston in the States. I live in Bedford now. And I was in hospital for a long time. And because the oven cleaner had burnt all of my esophagus, I needed to learn how to eat again and how to eat, soft foods. And at that point, I looked at the dietitian that was working with me and I thought, that looks nice. She just kind of swan around in a white coat saying things like, don't eat raspberries, love. And I thought, oh, I could do that.
Wow.
And then it was quite a while later, about 5 or 6 years later, when I realized I wanted to do something else. And I remembered this woman swanning around the wards in a white coat saying, don't eat raspberries, love. And I thought, I'll go and do that. And I had no idea it was going to take me forever to train.
Yeah.
I didn't even have maths or a science O level, and so I had to go and do an access course, and then it was 4 years at uni and a lot of practical experience, but it was the best thing I ever did, and I absolutely love it.
Well, it sounds like an extremely traumatic entrance into dietetics. That sounds incredibly painful.
Well, yeah, it definitely gives you a little bit of insight, and certainly gave me, I suppose, an appreciation of how precious and how delicate good health is, which makes everything that I do now so much more real, I suppose, because I've always kind of remembered that actually, you know, the bottom line, before I think you think about food as being nutritious, you've got to think about food as being delicious first. If it doesn't taste good, if it doesn't look good, nobody's going to eat it. It doesn't matter what it gives your body.
Wow.
So you've got to love what you're
eating. Yes, couldn't agree more. And gosh, two things. First of all, I'd love to live with you. It must be amazing, because not only do you know what you're doing, it's going to be tasting freaking fantastic. But secondly, I mean, so I've recorded a couple of podcasts on menopause to date, and we've just done one actually with a doctor, Dr. Caoimhe Hartley. I'm sure you know her. She was in.
I certainly do.
And one of the questions that comes up over and over and over again around time of perimenopause and menopause is weight.
Yeah.
So I you know, and just it's like this. Oh my God, what I used to do years ago just doesn't work for me anymore. And and then people are desperately, I don't know, racing around a treadmill or cutting these crazy diets, and you know, and it's just not working. And then that just spirals you into this whole feeling of defeat. And you know,
100%, Jennifer. And I think what's really important is that women get their head around what's going on, why that is actually happening, because the reality is 75% of menopausal or perimenopausal women will gain on average around about 10 kilos. That's a good stone and a half. That is a good dress size, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The unfortunate thing as well is because of the nature of the cause of the weight gain. So predominantly this is happening because estrogen levels are dropping. Same as every other symptom of perimenopause. But why that's important is that the estrogen has been giving you your female shape. So whether you didn't think you had one before, your estrogen was giving you slightly wider at the chest, slightly wider at the hips, with a little bit of a nipped in waist. Now, you know, that doesn't mean to say that everybody looked like Marilyn Monroe, but you know, you literally had that sort of slight hourglass shape, and estrogen did that. It was also, it gave you all your female characteristics, and that shape is the female shape. So when your estrogen starts to reduce, you start laying fat down in a way you never did before, and it all starts to become a lot more central around your trunk. You start finding fat on your back where you never had it before, around your tummy, your just under the bra. You'll often find women talking about kind of the muffin tops that they never had, this tummy that's just appeared. And this is all down to the loss of estrogen causing you to lay down fat in that central area. But it gets more complex than that as well. So as well as fat being laid down subcutaneously, that just means under the skin, which is how most of us would lay down fat in our younger years. For women, as you lose that estrogen, you start laying down what we call visceral fat, and that's the brown, hard to get rid of fat that wraps around your organs and is not good for
that's
health.
A dangerous one, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's tougher to get rid of. But there's something else that's compounding this as well. And this is why those, you know, lose 2 stone in 20 minutes, quick diets to go on holiday diets don't work. They worked when you were 30. Didn't matter, you know, forget whether you kept it off, but you could get rid of it when you
could
30.
Do it for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. Now you could do that for a couple of months, those diets, and it still won't work. You cannot move this weight just through calorie restriction alone. So there's something else then going on. Now we have to think of ourselves for a minute, like just think of ourselves as an animal species, and nature never ever intended for us to live much beyond our early 40s. And in fact, it's only the last few hundred years that we have lived beyond that. So part of the hangover of that evolutionary process is that we start losing muscle tissue in a natural process of aging from the age of about 30. And we will lose a small percentage each year, men and women. But when women start losing their estrogen, that muscle loss accelerates. And that's really important when it comes to perimenopausal weight gain, because muscle tissue is the biggest influencer on your metabolic rate. So if you lose muscle tissue, your metabolic rate slows down. So you've got two things going against you. You're much more prone to lay down fat around the central area, and as visceral fat, you're much more prone to lay down fat anyway because your metabolic rate is slowing down. Now, that all sounds like doom and gloom, but, you know, I'm a real glass half full guy, and my thought here is knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
The minute women get their head around the fact that, A, you know, I am not a freak of nature. This is happening to most women going through this. Doesn't matter whether you're on HRT or not, this will still happen. There's a physiological reason for it. Then that gives us a very logical foundation to put together a template for managing this situation. However, we also then have to be quite sort of pragmatic about it and say, okay, so, you know, hormones have changed, metabolic rate has changed, you know, that's an influence, but you're still putting the stuff in your gob. And actually, we have now got to look at what your contribution to this situation is. And beyond almost, you know, just what you're eating, we have now really got to factor in how active you are. And that doesn't mean whether you go to the gym or you're doing HIIT classes or anything like that. We focus very carefully on functional activity. So I think, you know, the first thing to say is perimenopausal weight gain is absolutely normal. Mm-hmm. You are in the majority. It is absolutely fixable, but you have got to accept what's going on. You have got to accept the causes for this, and you have got to take responsibility for your part in this. And you're going to need to make some changes.
And that can be tough, I suppose, in the time when, I mean, you know, everything what you're saying is 100% right. And if people are being honest with themselves, you know, we're going through this change in our bodies, which sparks this whole, you know, the confidence, anxiety. So it can be very difficult to accept that. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I haven't really changed my eating habits, or, you know, and what I'm hearing as well, there's a lot of uptake of drinking more wine in the evening, because that's the thing that helps them sleep, because the sleep is gone, and then you're in this vicious circle. So it is, you're right. We have to take responsibility.
We do. And also, I think it's really important to remember, actually, you don't need to have changed your eating habits for this to happen. Your metabolic rate is slowing down. So if you don't change your eating habits, this almost certainly will happen. It isn't, you know, you don't have to start eating more. It's a bit like if you imagine you were a car, you were a Lamborghini. Now you're a Ford Focus.
Oh no!
Exactly. In terms of your, you know, your and your fuel capacity, your speed, all of that. But again, I don't think, you know, we're so frightened of talking about aging. But the reality is, you know, we cannot dress this up in pink fluff. The reality is, this is what's happening. Modern life can keep you alive well into your 90s. We have amazing medical care. We have great nutrition, great sanitation. We have the earning capacity to live long and live well. But this is the moment when a woman needs to decide, what type of 85-year-old do you want to be? Do you want to be the woman that everybody looks at and thinks, God, I want to be like her. Look at her. She's decorating her own dining room. She still does her own gardening. She goes to the shops every day. Or do you want to be the poor love who is sitting in the corner of a nursing home waiting for somebody to stop and help her go for a wee because you can't get up out of a chair. You know, it is that simple. We were never, ever meant to live this long, but the quality of the life of the years ahead of us are absolutely down to us. You know, despite this pandemic we've been through, we don't generally die of infectious diseases. You know, we don't die of cholera anymore. We don't die of those types of things. We die of diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, strokes, cancer. These are things that are largely controlled by our lifestyle choices.
Yes.
And if you are a menopausal woman who has battled with your weight all your life, it's going to get tougher now.
Yeah.
If you're a woman who has never had to think about it before and suddenly this is starting to do it, you are going to need to start thinking about it now. But you absolutely can. You do not need to live in purgatory to turn this around and absolutely get in control of it.
I'm sure the same thing happens to a man in its own way. I'm sure a man doesn't just go through. I mean, you're probably going to say it's slightly easier. It's lucky we're on Zoom.
Well, it does happen to guys, but I think guys don't have the guys only have the natural aging process. It doesn't accelerate for them in the same way that it does for a woman. And they don't, we don't have the hormonal change. Because essentially, because you're losing estrogen, you start laying fat down like a bloke.
Yes.
That's why it's all around your trunk and your tummy.
Yeah.
It is a lot easier for guys. The other thing is, of course, as you said, you know, some women, not all, but some women are feeling utterly ghastly with their other menopausal symptoms. And if weight happens to be a part of that, you know, I absolutely promise every woman she can do something about this. But very often I'm saying, you need to go and get these symptoms sorted out first. You are no good to me. If you have got aches and pains, if you have no self-confidence, if you haven't got the energy to get out the door, if you're struggling to hold your job down because you're full of brain fog and your marriage is struggling because intimacy is so uncomfortable and painful and you've got all that going on.
Yeah, it's huge. It's massive. Yeah,
it really is. And again, first thing to say is you don't put up with that. You do not have to put up with that. No woman needs to just tolerate that and think she has to be a hero and live through it. You get some help, but you get some help before you try and tackle this way. I run a 12-week back to basics menopause weight loss program that we do in a group setting. We've just started.
You're doing this online at the moment as well, aren't you?
We've got several women from Ireland in the group.
Fantastic. I'll put everything on the website after so people can contact you.
But you know, just to highlight why this is so important. So I've just had 64 women apply to take part in the program and I've accepted 14. The rest, it was, you go and sort your menopause out.
Wow.
You cannot do this when you're on your knees with symptoms.
Yeah.
Because that's more important, and I will get a result with you when you feel good.
Yes.
And you can feel good.
Yeah, it's very tough. So are you, I mean, we're not here to obviously advocate everybody goes on HRT, but I mean, it is something that is, you can start women back on the right road. If it's something that women can take, HRT seems to be just a
very good option. HRT essentially is there to relieve symptoms. And if you are working with somebody, a menopause doctor, a trained menopause doctor who understands menopause, you can take HRT if you've even had breast cancer. you would be very closely monitored, but you can. The risks that people have in their heads of the link between HRT and breast cancer is teeny tiny. What we've got to remember, and it's really important, Jennifer, that we sort of shout this from the rooftops, is two other things happen when you lose your estrogen. A, you lose your protection against coronary heart disease. More women in Ireland die of heart disease than anything else. And we never talk about it. Up until perimenopause, women have a protection that men don't have because of their estrogen. When you lose that, your risk of heart disease goes up to the same as a man's. And women, because women have had that protection, they don't know how to know if they're having a heart attack. And it's quite different from a man having a heart attack, where the symptoms come from. They all come down the side of the head, the jaw. People will think they've got earache. It's not like chest pain that you would expect from a man having a heart attack. So, you know, HRT gives you that protection back, and it takes care of your bones.
Yes.
So, you know, there is, am I an advocate for HRT? My goodness, if it makes women feel good, you bet you are.
Oh, and listen, I couldn't agree more with you. And it's actually the reason why I started the whole podcast in the first place, because I was doing my own investigation. Now, I'm not at menopause yet. I'm perimenopause, but I had the bizarre symptoms of, you know, I had a few normal ones, but anxiety and stuff like that. And it was only when I, like you said, went and actually sat down with a proper specialist, it just all made so much sense. And it really, we are so slow over here. I don't know why. I have friends kind of looking at me like, what are you doing? And it's frustrating because, you know,
it gets better though. You know, the likes of Kiva, the Menopause Hub, Irish Menopause are really raising awareness amongst Irish women. And, you know, even in my own Facebook community, Harley Street at Home, we have a lot of Irish members. And I think in general, you know, it's even worse in the States, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing reasonably well, but it still is amazing to me that we prepare young women so well for puberty.
Yes.
But we never tell them about the other end of this.
No.
And the reality is, most women will spend as much, if not more, of their lives menopausal than they did in their fertile years. So, you know, to think of this as being the end of something, this is the beginning. And in fact, if you get in the driving seat of it, these can be the best years of your life. You know, you
can be the start.
By your mid-40s, you know who you are. You're not going to take BS from anybody. You know, you've usually got where you want to get in your career. In terms of your relationship, you've either worked it out or you've got rid of him. But life, you know where you are.
Yes.
And actually, I don't know about you, I spent most of my 20s and 30s feeling like I was playing at life, you know? And
it's a hard time to go back there.
I'm 52 and I like this age. And I'm excited about what the future holds for me. And I think that's the way we need to start looking at this. But we absolutely have to decide, right, so what do I want my decades to be like?
And it is important to say, and obviously I could be wrong, so, you know, tell me to shut up. You cannot replace estrogen with food.
And so many people, there are.
That's not to say we need to look at our diets. Clearly, if we're sitting eating burgers all day and drinking.
Yeah. But there are naturopaths, there are nutritional therapists who will gladly charge you a fortune and tell you that they will get rid of your menopausal symptoms through your diet. The bottom line is, you can't. I cannot get rid of hot flashes. I cannot revitalize a dry vagina. I can't get rid of brain fog or any of those things with diet. What I can do is enhance your menopause. I can lengthen your life and potentially save your life. But if you want to go along and eat a piece of menopause cake a day and think that's going to get rid of your hot flushes, quite frankly, I don't think you probably had very bad symptoms in the first place. And it makes me so cross when women who do choose to take control of their menopause are made to feel bad that they're not doing it. And I'm doing inverted commas, naturally. There is nothing unnatural about HRT. There is something very unnatural about promising people that you can solve their menopause symptoms by selling them supplements and giving them silly diets to follow. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very well said.
Could you help me down off my soapbox for a minute? Do you
listen, I, you know what? We talked about this actually, myself and Quiva, in the podcast, and I've just done one actually on osteoporosis because bone health is just a massive problem. And you know, I did that with another Irish dietitian called Aveen Bannon, and actually really scary, really scary. And you know, it's a tricky one. So where do you start? Because even thinking of dairy, for example, you know, Aveen's telling us, you know, we need to be having three portions of dairy products a day. We're looking at the weight. Some women might decide dairy out the window. Not even thinking
very much so. Many of the women I will see are quite dairy phobic. The reality is, and Aveen's bang on, three servings of dairy a day. If you're worried about the fat content of dairy, in actual fact, you'll get more calcium out of the lower fat products because the calcium's in the watery part of the milk. So, you know, your skim milk, your low fat yogurts will have more calcium than the full fat varieties. So this does not need to pose a problem for your weight. But if you choose, and let's face it, you know, food intolerances are as fashionable as a Prada handbag these days. If you're choosing not to eat dairy, then there are a multitude of dairy alternatives that you need to look for on the label to check that they are calcium enriched. But if you're not going to get your calcium from dairy foods or dairy or calcium enriched dairy and alternatives, it is going to be incredibly difficult. There are lots of other foods that contain calcium, but to get enough into your diet is a military exercise. You know, you really have to be very, very motivated to do that. So unless you've got a specific issue like lactose intolerance or cow's milk protein allergy, my view is, you know, have some dairy.
Yeah, get it into you. Yeah,
exactly.
Another thing I think that people kind of fall into the trap at this age is just, you know, taking out the food groups and deciding that perhaps you should go gluten-free or let's cut out the carbs, and then you're frickin' exhausted so you can't do the exercise. It's just this vicious cycle. I mean, in simple terms, what should we be doing?
Well, I think, you know, I understand and I really empathize with people looking for that magic solution. All of these weight loss regimes that are, might be things like intermittent fasting, that might be keto, you know, so carb, very low carbs, lots of protein and fat, or even something as daft as like the cabbage soup diet. You know, all they are is a way of saving calories that is dressed up in a regime to make it a bit more sexy than saying to people, don't eat so much. There is no more magic after that. And, you know, in many respects, I know I sort of sometimes, you know, try and keep things lighthearted and what have you. But the reality is, the hardest part of my job, this is like selling. Yes. I am literally on a fourth court selling secondhand cars in terms of trying to persuade people to invest and commit in their own health. And my message is inherently dull.
Yeah.
You know, so healthy eating, fruit and veg a day, having a bit more fiber. We've all heard that stuff. but it doesn't change.
No, and it's not that sexy, let's call a spade a spade. No, unless you're into it. Like, I love eating a healthy diet, but at the end of the day, it is as simple as, I suppose, upping your movement, reducing your calories.
But totally.
If there's all this other stuff going on, you know, and also,
why wouldn't
you? Exactly. And if you're not seeing any kind of, you know, results, that's another thing.
Well, again, let's put it into perspective. You know, normal, first of all, doesn't even matter. It might feel like it for some perimenopausal women. Nobody goes upstairs thin one night and comes down in the morning with a weight problem. That takes a little while to develop, and it's going to take a little while to turn it around. Normal healthy weight loss is anything between 0.5 and 2 pounds a week. That's not a lot. Now, what we're also going to need to do is start getting you moving more and doing some weight resistance exercise. So my sort of three-pronged attack to this is around about a 300 to 500 calorie a day deficit from what you're currently eating. So not a standard one diet fits all. Look at what you're doing and see where you can save. Maybe portion sizes, maybe booze, maybe unconscious grazing, maybe the foods that you're actually choosing. But usually it's a bit, you know, there aren't so many people that are eating pie and chips and 6 pints of lager a night anymore. And if there are, they don't really care about this.
But interestingly, portion size. We are eating massive portions.
Definitely. And I mean, a real good indicator is to say to women, all right, if you've got any blokes in the house or teenage boys, have a look and see, do you eat the same amount as them?
Yes.
If you do, there's your problem. You don't need to eat that much. Or if you're, you know, skipping meals through the day, a lot of women will do that, and grazing on stuff, the likelihood is you cannot go into a meal ravenous and control your portion sizes. So it's really easy to eat 3 meals worth of calories in that evening meal. Plus, as you say, if lockdown's getting you down or you've had a busy day and you've got into the habit of a couple of glasses of wine a night, it's very easy to start to see where you can make some savings without moving into a convent. You know, you don't need to live like a nun.
Yeah, because we want to live, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said at the beginning, you've got to enjoy your food. But if you, you know, so I'm a big advocate for a very honest food and activity diary. Have a look, and people 9 times out of 10 will be quite surprised at what they see when they actually record it. As soon as you do, you'll start seeing what you don't like. And that your indicators of things to change. So you can easily save 300 to 500 calories a day. If you then also use your smartphone, measure your steps for the day, see what your average is over a few days, and increase it by 5,000 a day.
Okay.
5,000 a day gives you about a half hour brisk walk. You're not window shopping, you're walking like you mean it. Yeah. You need to get a little bit breathless, but still be able to talk, feel yourself get a little bit warmer. There's your functional aerobic activity. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, to replace this muscle tissue that you've lost because of that aging process, we need 10, 15 minutes of gentle weight resistance exercise like Pilates or box press ups, squats, abdominal curls, anything that's working the big muscle groups. But again, much, much more important and achievable to do 15 minutes a day than do 2 single-hour workouts a week.
Sure.
You'll get much more benefit.
Yeah. And actually, we discussed that in the osteoporosis, because I think I'm a Pilates instructor as well, and I'm teaching everything on Zoom now, and it's working actually really well. Love it. But it's this all or nothing. They jump in, you know, doing loads, then there's a possibility of an injury. And then you're just not feeling very motivated after a couple of weeks. So it is, start slow. And that's what I say to, and particularly if you have been diagnosed actually with osteoporosis, because you need to be super careful then how you're moving.
Totally. Totally. You know? And I think, you know, a lot of women, it's one of the things that, you know, again, on my program, I bring a specialist menopause Pilates instructor in to work with each woman, because I want her to do it safely. I want to be aware of injuries and all of this kind of thing. But I think, you know, for a lot of the ladies, they are coming quite new into exercising. And there's a fear of it, thinking, you know, I don't belong here. I don't, this isn't what I do. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, it can be quite life changing. Mm-hmm. I think bringing exercise into your life for a very specific reason, and feeling your confidence grow as you start seeing that that exercise is actually changing the way you, your shape.
Yes. I mean, it is true that when you exercise, you release the happy hormones. We've heard this before. It's 100% true.
Yep.
But you don't have to be doing it for long. I love this idea of what you're doing with the 12-week program. And do the women in this group, and I know you were saying there's only 14, mm-hmm. but did they all talk to each other kind of outside the group? And
absolutely. What we do, we have a weekly meeting on Zoom. They all get 3 or 4 one-to-one sessions with me over the 12 weeks. But most importantly, and I mean, it's amazing today, we set up a WhatsApp group and they are on there all day supporting each other. I've just, what are we now? It's sort of middle of the afternoon. We've just finished now. Everyone's been sending in pictures of their lunch, because we talk about food groups and balance those on the plate. And it's just, it brings something that as a lone practitioner I can't deliver.
Yes,
you know, the camaraderie.
Well, it's hearing each other's story and thinking, oh my god, I'm not alone. I actually, a bit like when you start maybe tackling your menopause, when you hear you could be suffering all this for so many years, and then realize, oh my god, we're actually all going through this,
you know, absolutely.
I mean, all women are going to go through menopause if you live this long. It's you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You might be lucky and not have a lot of the symptoms, but actually even then you have to be very careful, because you could be suffering behind the scenes, like we said, with the bones and the heart health and all of that. So it's quite, you know, the risks are there.
I think the commonality, because of course they're all changing their original own diets, so their plans are quite different, but the one thing that does bond them together is the fact that they're going through menopause together and getting their head around that, but they're also going through this process of change, because this is a behavioral change program. So, you know, to understand what people's relationship with food is, how you use food when you're bored, lonely, sad, fed up, angry, happy, how perhaps you sabotage your own plan, you know, all of these things. And what's beautiful is that since we set up the Facebook group, it's not just me. I've got a menopause doctor, Naomi Potter. I've got my Pilates teacher. I've got coaches. I've got a yoga teacher, a pelvic floor specialist. So everybody comes into these group sessions and does their thing. So essentially, yes. You know, I think, so I was talking to someone who finished it the other day. She'd lost 1 stone, 8 pounds. She'd lost 6 inches off her waist, 8 off her hips, delighted and still going. But what they all say is, you know, this has actually been like a course for menopause. I feel like, you know, I have completely changed my view of it, my approach to it, and my attitude to it. And I'm now a woman who's proud to be in control of it.
Yes.
And that's amazing.
And it takes a while to form new habits, which I suppose is why it's 12 weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. We reckon about 12 weeks to for something to start being the norm. And you know, you think about behavior change, so something that is so conditioned you suddenly have to relearn. It's a really interesting thing. About 10 years ago, I stopped drinking alcohol altogether. I used to love my drink a bit too much. So I decided time to stop. And that was a massive lifestyle change, you know, and it was hard. Yeah. I can't tell you how difficult it was. However, I still, and I always I'm open about it with the ladies that I work with. The reality is, though, you know, I either drink or I don't drink. It's black and white.
Yeah.
You still got to eat.
Yes.
Every single day. And that is very different. And I personally think, you know, what I'm offering people is actually the hardest thing they will ever do.
Mm.
But if they do it and do it properly, they will do it once and never have to do it again. It's, you know, anybody can eat, oh, I don't know, the dust diet for 6 weeks. You can do anything short term, but this is for life. And it's That's got it. To be, because whatever you do to control your weight in perimenopause, you are going to have to do for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So you can't do a fad or a quick fix
no.
or a gimmick. It's got to be your lifestyle choices that you're in control of and that you're happy to make. And that's
what do you think?
Hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's so hard. It's so hard because there's so much going on at this stage of our life. And maybe we have young kids now because we're all having kids later. And, you know, it's very tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lord knows what else COVID comes along. Is there something that you see? Like, what do you think we're doing it like mistake wise without even knowing? Is it portion size? Is it lack of movement? I mean, I know it's all combined, but over the years.
I think slowly but surely we get more and more sedentary, for sure. I think we drink more and more alcohol. For sure. Yes. We certainly see alcohol intakes increasing in the 40 plus age group. And yeah, we get used to eating more food than we need.
Mm.
We stop eating. We lose. I mean, a part of the program, again, is really understanding and learning to recognize hunger and satiety. So yes. No longer being hungry. And the vast majority of people I see will eat when they're ravenous and eat until they're stuffed. And it takes a long, long time to start actually eating mindfully and recognizing that actually I am now no longer hungry.
Yes.
That is satiety. And of course, you know, that's quite different from that was blinking gorgeous, I want more.
Mm.
That isn't, I'm still hungry. You know, knowing that you are actually hungry is quite a difficult thing to perceive because, you know, again, on an evolutionary term, we have been programmed to gorge. We were hunter-gatherers. So, you know, we would get our kill and we would eat it like a lion. Essentially, until we couldn't eat anymore because we never knew when the next meal was coming.
That's
you know, but modern life isn't like that. Food is in abundance. We can have whatever we want, whenever we want it. But we
we're eating too fast as well then.
Yes. Yeah. Just like...
My kids
well, most of us like, do yeah. because food isn't a priority. When most of the time we're doing it whilst we're looking at a screen, whether it's our phone, our tablet or our laptop, we're not concentrating on it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to miss the fact that you're satisfied. But similarly, we eat quickly and we miss that moment of recognizing satisfaction. Again, because we're pre-programmed to gorge, it's a little bit like thirst. If you're in the gym doing a workout and you get thirsty, by the time you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated. Similarly, by the time you feel satisfied or register, or, you know, I'm getting full now, you were actually satisfied half a plateful ago.
Right.
But what we tend to do is we get used to eating that sort of Sunday lunch feeling quantity
yeah.
or Christmas lunch quantity. You know, when you sit on the sofa and you suddenly realise, oh, I'm stuffed.
Mm.
You know, that is, if that happens more than once or twice a week, there's your problem.
Yeah.
And it's rarely changing what you eat. You know, I think people expect, again, that if they see a dietitian, that I'm going to be asking them to gather mushrooms with the morning dew on and eat those, and goji berries, and only eat, you know, organic vegetables. Absolute garbage. You know, a little bit of what you fancy does you good. I want you to learn how to eat chocolate in a controlled way. I need you to be able to order a takeaway and navigate your right way around the menu, or, you know, to sit down on Sunday to have a family roast, because that's a vital part of life. But I need you to do that in a way that's balanced, that is moderate, that you are able to say, that was absolutely delicious, but I've had enough.
Yeah. And there's more coming if I need it later.
Absolutely. You can eat, you know, when you are 85, you can eat as many roast potatoes as you want. Right now, you maybe need to just be a little bit more careful with them. But
I'm delighted to hear that we can still eat the roast potatoes.
Definitely.
Because that's what I mean. There's this whole, I'll take that out and I'll take this out. Sure, I hear my teenage kids sometimes saying, I'm going to go in the cut, I'm giving up carbs. I'm like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah.
How are you going to move, like, all those weights that you're doing?
Well, exactly. You know, when we're here, we're asking women to replace, you said earlier on, you know, so diet can't replace your estrogen. Absolutely right. But the thing that you can replace is that lost muscle tissue. Hence why I want you doing the Pilates moves. But as you know, carbohydrate is your fuel. It's like putting petrol in your car. If we're trying to get you to build new muscle, you have to have the fuel to do the exercise to build the muscle. Protein doesn't build muscle. Exercise builds muscle. Mm. And if you don't have that fuel, you will actually break down your existing muscle to fuel the exercise you're doing to build the new muscle. You know, that's like going to work and flushing 50 quid down the loo every day. Mm. What the hell are you doing that for? It doesn't make any scientific sense at all.
Which is marvelous to hear.
In
fairness, it is, because we don't want to give up carbs. I mean, come on.
Absolutely. You know. My kind of plate model I always use is, imagine your plate. This is whatever you're having: fish supper, roast dinner. Imagine your plate divided into four quarters: quarter protein, quarter carbs, and half the plate fruit, veg, or salad. Mm-hmm. That will always, always get your balance of food groups right. So that would be, you know, a smallish portion of fish, a smallish portion of chips, portion of mashed peas, and a big salad.
Yeah.
You can do that with your roast dinner. You can do it with anything. There is no such thing as good and bad foods. There is only good and bad diets.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. So another thing that seems to crop up at this stage, it actually did for me a little bit, is gut issues seems to be a big problem.
Yeah, very much. In fact, we've just covered, this has been Digestive Health Month on Harley Street at home, because so many women either find that their gut health, whilst it's always been a bit problematic, declines at perimenopause, or some women find that, having never had problems before, or it all starts now. We really don't know why, but it's a definitely higher incidence. And absolutely, it can be as a result of changes in the microbiome and the bacteria in the gut. It might be that you begin to get develop the sort of intolerance to some foods that previously used to be fine but are having a problem. That's usually, though, as a result of a poor microbiome, which we can correct using proper probiotics. Often, though, it can be triggered by stress and anxiety, and sometimes also just by almost the mechanical action of the gut. So very often, and particularly I think women, have to portray everything's fine on the outside when inside their tummy is like a washing machine. And, you know, if you are sending your stress and your anxiety to your tummy, just in the same way that someone else sending it to their shoulders will get headaches, it is not surprising then if you start getting gut problems. But again, this is very much about building up a toolkit of managing your particular gut health. And the only way really to understand that is a really good chat through what, you know, what's the history? When does this get bad? Is it bad when you go on holiday, when you relax it a bit more?
And keep a diary.
What's it like if you eat? Exactly. I love diaries, symptom diaries, food diaries. But again, utterly, I wouldn't say curable. What I would, because you don't cure things like irritable bowel syndrome, but utterly manageable, and you can improve it.
Yeah. And I, you know, interestingly, actually, I spend a lot of time in my classes when we're kind of talking about breath and all that kind of thing. And there's so much that goes on in Pilates. Sometimes people get so confused, but I often find women in particular, you know, this bracing and pulling in of the core all the time, even when they're breathing. So therefore, everything inside is being kind of just mushed together, you know, and women, we all, I hope myself included, years ago, even when I trained first, we're told pull in your belly, whereas the opposite is true. When you're breathing in, you need to allow it to expand and then soften. So, you know, meditation is something, breath, you know, can really help with gut issues.
Totally. I'm so glad you, I mean, yesterday, again, I did a live with the pelvic floor specialist, you know, and sort of saying to women, I know you think about pelvic floor and weeing, but actually, constipation and pelvic floor go hand in hand. Looking at just the way people sit on the loo, get your knees above your hips. And tomorrow I'm actually doing another live for digestive health with a yoga and meditation specialist. We've done it with our Pilates teacher, because all of these things are intrinsic. And again, I often think irritable bowel syndrome is a syndrome of modern life. It's not going to kill you, but it is your body telling you, I really don't like the way you live, mate. You know,
stress,
tidy things up.
Everybody jumps to diet, which of course, if it's crap, you're probably, you know, chances are it is probably going to be your diet, but stress is a big thing. And like you say, the pelvic floor, it's all connected to the stomach, to the back, to the breathe. The whole thing is connected. It's like a hydraulic system. So if we're not breathing properly, which sounds ridiculous, because obviously if you're breathing, you're alive, but we tend to hold on, you know? And like you say, some people take it in the neck, some people take it in the stomach, because we're all connected with the vagus nerve and all of that. So it is, it's definitely an area to look at.
We should do another session all about gut health.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I could sit here and talk to you for hours.
Thank you so much.
So interesting. Where can people find everything?
So if you're interested in menopause in general, do have a look at Harley Street at Home Menopause on Facebook. Totally free to join. Masses of information there. And most importantly, a lovely, friendly, warm community. It's a nice place, so you'd be very welcome there. If you want to have a chat to me specifically, my website is Nigel Denby Dietitian, all one word. You can private message me on there. And I think it's important to say, because you know, I am not, menopause is an expensive business for you to see the right people, and often if somebody's not sure if they would work well or need to see me, I'll often do a free 15-minute chat on Zoom, and just let somebody see, well, what are your issues? This is how I work. This is what it costs. Now go away and think about it.
Sure.
Don't commit now. So I'm really happy to do that. And of course, previously, or I still am very connected with the Menopause Hub in Dublin. I was practicing there, and I see lots of women from Ireland. And I kind of just think we're all one big family. So
yeah. Oh, the work they do there is fantastic. It's great, actually. Thankfully, we're getting a little bit better, and Loretta's done a fantastic job with the clinic, and hopefully it'll keep growing, and more women. I just think if we can all just, and that's what's great about your group. I'm a member of your group as well, and it is a lovely environment to be in. You can go on. It's a private group. Nobody else can see apart from the members, obviously.
Yeah.
And ask the questions and just get the answers back from another woman, from another perspective.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, again, it's one of the things that has been so lovely out of lockdown. You know, we only launched in April last year. We've got, I don't know, getting on 6,000 members now. Wow. And even, I mean, we never imagined it would grow. And as it has, to that extent, and as it has grown, our fear was, is it going to lose this nice feeling? But yeah, we've got some lovely administrators who really keep an eye out if anybody's pushing anything dodgy and gets rid of them quickly. And, you know, our whole issue is give these women information, protect them, keep them safe, but make sure, you know, that any information they're getting is evidence-based, that we know where it's come from, and that we always leave information out there free. You know, this has got to be accessible to everybody. It's why what you're doing is fantastic.
I'm learning so much. I'm having all these wonderful chats, and that's why I started this, because I thought I love learning and I love chatting. And I thought, oh, what a great way to just meet great people. And
well, what we should do at some stage is get you onto Harley Street at Home to have a chat about what you're doing, because I bet lots of our members would love it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love great. That. Thank you
Let's
so much.
Let's sort that out. Yeah.
Cheers. Will do. All right, Nigel, thank you so much for your time. So good of you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Like you say, it felt like talking to an old friend. I could have kept going for hours. So
thanks
brilliant.
A million.
Thanks,
have
Jennifer.
A great day.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, maybe you could share it and subscribe to the podcast and come and check us out at thewhenpodcast.com. Thank you so much.